Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello and welcome to the Motormouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between.
Do you work for or run a business? You can now raise awareness and funds for urgent change by joining the Brain Tumor Charity's brand new campaign, Businesses Against Brain Tumors. By declaring yourself a business against brain tumors and taking on your very own Brain Power Challenge, you can raise funds for vital medical research while improving your own brain health at the same time. People have shaped our world and facilitated amazing amounts of progress through business. Organizations are connecting people every day, innovating in the face of challenges like the pandemic and creating products that make up our culture. Now is the time to take that power and put it into good by beating brain tumors. And we all know there's power in numbers. Brain tumors are still the biggest cancer killer of children and adults under 40, with treatments having changed very little since the 1980s. It's no wonder when only 3% of national cancer research funding is spent on brain tumours. So it's down to the charity and its community of amazing supporters to urgently enact change. Look for the Brain Tumour Charity on social media to find out how you, your colleagues and your business can be the difference we need to see to defeat brain tumours for good. Motormouth is proud to be officially partnered with the Brain Tumour Charity, so a huge thank you for your support. If you can donate anything, you can also do that through the motormouth.club website or through the Brain Tumour Charity direct, and together we can help every single person affected by a brain tumour. It's season 9 and we're really excited to be once again teaming up with F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences is the closest you can get to the pinnacle of motorsport. And let's face it, any chance to get close to Formula One this year, we're all over it. And the brilliant news is you can now be trackside thanks to F1 Experiences. Enjoy the very best race tickets and track hospitality, first class hotels and unprecedented access you simply cannot get anywhere else. For more information on how you can book your F1 experience, visit F1Experiences.com, where you can also save 5% on your very own F1 Experiences package by using the code MOTORMOUTH when checking out online. So, what are you waiting for? Experience the 2021 F1 season firsthand with exclusive access courtesy of F1 Experiences. Get booking today at F1Experiences.com.
Hello, Tim Sylvie here, and today we're joined by a man who hails from Hemel Hempstead in Hertfordshire, a town which was developed after the Second World War bombings as a new town designed to house the population displaced by the London Blitz, although it actually had been a settlement since the 8th century and became a town when King Henry VIII granted it its modern-day status. It lies 24 miles northwest of London with a population of around 100,000 people. And did you know, Harry Benjamin, that Hemel Hempstead is home to the first ever multi-storey car park in Great Britain, which was built into the side of a hill in the Marlowe's shopping district back in 1960. But enough of my Hertfordshire-based facts. Harry, first of all, it's good to have you back because you missed the last show.
Did I? Who was that with?
Brabs.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that. I felt like I was there because I edited it.
You did. Yes.
So it felt like I was there. How was David Brabham?
He was lovely. He was really, really nice. Top bloke. Fascinating story. Amazing racing CV. And obviously now doing very well with his Brabham Automotive and Motorsport Exploits and the BT. Is it the BT car? BT64? I want to say our guest will probably know, but he's very good, and it was just odd doing it without you. I think that was the first time, or the second time actually, in over 100 episodes.
That was the second time, because I had COVID or something. I was ill when you had Alexander Sims, and then I was on holiday basically, yeah. So with no Wi-Fi, which is my excuse.
Fair dues. Well, look, should we introduce today's guest?
I think so. The Wi-Fi is holding up for now.
Good. Today, I'm delighted to say we're joined by Anthony Davidson. His first experience in racing was in karts, aged just 8 years old, and quickly found he had a talent for it and went on to take part in his first competitive race in 1987, the year that the Great Storm crashed into Britain, causing over £5 billion worth of damage in today's money. And those over a certain age will remember it well. Harry, you certainly won't. He'd go on to compete in championships all over the world in Formula Ford, Formula 3, sports cars, and of course, Formula 1. And we're also now very familiar with him on our screens outside of the cockpit and in front of the camera with Sky Sports F1. We're here to find out more about his life, career, thoughts, views, and opinions. Anthony Davidson, welcome to the Motormouth.
Wow, that's a great introduction. Thank you very much, guys. Privileged to be here and join you.
Thanks, Ant, for coming on. Tim is always one for a historic stat, particularly if they're location-based. Yeah. So
I've learned things about my hometown I never thought I would.
You're Did welcome. You not know about the two-story car park?
I think I might have heard that once before. I'm amazed you didn't mention the Magic Roundabout.
Yes.
Really, stunned.
The Magic Roundabout, the worst roundabout on the planet, bar none.
Well, look, enough Hemel Hempstead chat. And first of all, thanks for coming on the show. Really great to have you on. Where are you today? Are you still in that area of the world, or have you moved to pastures new?
No, I'm up near Banbury these days. Yeah, so in the motorsport haven, as it's known around these areas. And it brought me here in early 2000, actually. When I was quickly getting on the ladder in single-seater motorsport. And actually moved to Brackley as my first venture up north. People downtown would call this place. This has just been home for since 2000, and met my wife here. She's originally from Banbury. We got married in Banbury, and now live just up the road from there.
It's funny. Oh, wow. It's, I think nearly everyone we interview now lives in Banbury. It seems to be the place where all racing drivers, old and new, tend to gravitate towards.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I still work for Mercedes, for the Brackley-based team, through their multiple guises throughout the years, which started again in the early 2000s. So, just being local to there is a bit of a blessing for these times, and I do so much simulator work for them.
Yeah, and well, it would be remiss, I think, to not talk about briefly, this podcast is usually all about our guest, all about you, Anthony Davidson. But first of all, I think we would love to get your view on the Abu Dhabi final and the Grand Prix, the season finale. Bit of a quiet one, bit boring end to it, really. Just sort of petered out at the end.
For
some of the bits that did happen, there was quite a controversial last lap. What were your initial thoughts on the situation? Was Lewis just on the receiving end of a bit of bad luck, or was it unjust of the stewards? Did it just go Verstappen's way? How did you see it all?
It was all so lighthearted at the start. It's getting serious now, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. We'll move on quickly.
Here we go then, roll up the sleeves. I've been watching it back today again. Obviously, you watched it live. I wasn't out there in Abu Dhabi. Thankfully, I think I could soak it all up from on my sofa and just watch it all unfold. I mean, what a dramatic end. It's kind of fitting, isn't it, I guess, for how the season's been. We all knew deep down, I think, that it was going to end in some kind of drama. It wasn't surely just going to be Lewis walking off into the distance and winning by 10 or 15 seconds, whatever it was. It is very fitting. And that last five-lap safety car that caused by Nicholas Latifi in his fight with Mick Schumacher, it was so fitting, really was. But my heart did go out for Lewis. I did feel sorry for him after putting in such an impeccable performance. So apart from obviously the contra Thompson lap one down at turn six or the old turn eight, whatever however you want to call it. That was the only kind of drama he had, I guess, in the race up until that point. I guess the jury's still out on whether he should have been told to give that place back. I'm still undecided on that one. It was a bit of a tight call. I think I am surprised in a way that the stewards didn't say, based on the last race in Jeddah, that he didn't have to give the place back. But then he was ran out of road in a tight fight. Once again, I put 100% blame on these stupid runoff areas that we have. You would see a very different outcome, I believe, if both from the overtaker and the guy that's being overtaken, if there was a sea of gravel staring at you instead of tarmac in that moment. You have to yield earlier. Are you as ballsy on the brakes under the overtaking situation? Probably not, because you do risk going off the track. It's all because of this silly runoff area that we have in corners like that, and obviously in turn four in Brazil. So that was the first moment, but really the only moment that Lewis had to face in that race, because he had the speed. It was a joy to watch him. It's been a joy to watch both him and Max all year. They've been amazing, honestly, just so far ahead of the rest of the field. Really a brilliant display of speed and skill that none can come close to out there. They elevated themselves to a whole new level. They've been supreme. But there had to be one winner. And unfortunately, it did come down to that last safety car. And it's very hard to blame anyone for it, for how it unfolded. In the heat of the moment, to be Michael Massey, just try and put yourself in his position.
Horrible.
I'm so glad I wasn't doing his job. So glad I wasn't doing the steward's job. What do you do? You don't want to see a race finish under the safety car. Surely that's not how this championship was going to end. We didn't want it to end like that. I wouldn't have really wanted to end under a safety car. I've seen too many Indy 500s, for example, finish under the pace car, as they call it. And that's boring. No one wants to see a safety car finish to a race, especially a championship like this. So I understand there was that push to make it finish under racing circumstances. And the way that the rules fall in Formula One means that you can pit under safety car or full course yellow, even change your tyres under red flag situations, which that's a whole other topic to get into. Many other championships don't allow it, like the championship I've raced in this year in WEC, for example. And maybe that would clear up all of these problems. Who knows? But this safety car situation, I understand people's frustration. People that are fans of Lewis wanted to see him win the race on merit, as it looked like he was going to do, in only letting five cars past and not the other cars behind the battle at the front. So it was unprecedented. I've never seen that before in all the years I've followed Formula One, in all the years I've raced. For 34 years of my life, I've never seen that happen. And so I can see why there's a bit of a sour taste left in people's mouths from it, but it was more exciting than just watching a race finish under a safety car.
It was.
And I'm glad they pushed to do that. But in many ways, it would have been even more exciting if they just left all the cars in the same positions, because it still would have been a really close fight. Because all the cars had to get out of the way anyway under blue flags. They were all obliged to peel off out of the way as soon as Max got anywhere near them. And Max would have been flying, like you saw, and threatening the whole way through that third sector. Probably would have shoved it down the inside in desperation into the very final corner, and we'd be talking about something completely different.
Yeah,
So I feel like that would have been a more fair way to end the race than what happened. It was I was watching a race at the end, I guess, with, it's a bit like watching a boxing match with one fighter's hands tied behind his back. Well, guess who's going to win, guys?
A lot of people were saying it was like in a football match, you know, in an FA Cup final where one team's 3-0 up and the referee goes, all right, next goal wins.
And while we're at it, let's make the goal bigger. It's just an absolute given that you're going to score the goal. So I felt like turning the TV off, honestly, as soon as I saw the other cars disappear, and I'm now watching a car with brand new, or close to brand new, soft tyres, effectively a qualifying car, against a car on knackered old hard tyres that had done the majority of the race. It's just, like I say, a fighter with both hands tied behind his back. Yeah. No one wants to see candy stolen from a baby, and that's what we were left with at the end. That's what was created, and if that makes good TV, then so be it. But I personally think better TV would have been just to, look, you're running out of time, don't let the other cars pass. It was your initial decision in the first place, maybe bullied by Christian Horner and the Red Bull team into doing something different. Just leave it as is. You're running out of time. Leave all the cars in place. You haven't got the time to do it. We all want to see the race. We want to see them released and let them race. And all the other cars would have had to get out of the way anyway under a blue flag. So it was manipulated a little bit too far, in my opinion, and took away some of the anticipation.
Yeah, you mentioned there about Michael Massey, and he does have an almost impossible job, and he's following a man who was very well respected in that role. But do you think his position is almost going to be forced upon him? Do you think we'll see him there next year? Harry and I were talking about this earlier, and we feel a certain amount of sympathy for him, but do you think he can continue after all this controversy?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, he's a great guy. I'm friends with Michael. He's an intelligent man, and I think, but he's in a way he's still learning on the job.
Yeah,
he had a great mentor in Charlie Whiting, who left us all way too soon, and left Michael way too soon as well. And I think that was really, I think you're still seeing the effects of that in many ways. Whether or not Charlie would have even made the right call under that situation, yeah, who knows? I mean, I spoke to Charlie about this whole pitting under the virtual safety car and safety car situation. And he said to me at the time, well, the reason it's there, Ant, is because it's more entertaining for TV. Yeah. And you go, well, we're all treading a bit of a fine line there, aren't we? Because I just want to see pure racing. And for me, a fair fight seeing cars and drivers at least on the same age tyres. You can have different spec of tyres, but being able to pit under the safety car and virtual safety car, it's twofold, really, in my opinion. Why should cars and drivers be allowed to gain an advantage from there being a safety situation on circuit? That's one thing. In a sporting context, it always will throw up strategic differences, and that's what we saw in Abu Dhabi. The second part of that is that the reason why other categories like WEC don't allow to pit under the safety car, or there's a penalty for pitting under the safety car, I should say, is because they want to have full focus on the situation in hand on track.
Yeah.
There's a car on track. There are marshals on track. That's the whole reason the safety car's out there in the first place. So let's not divert our attention. If I'm race director and all the stewards and officials involved, I want to have full focus on the track, on that corner, making sure my marshals, who are volunteers, don't get run over. The onus is on me right now. And I don't want to be looking at the pit lane and seeing, oh, hang on, there's a mechanic that's just been run over in desperation, or everyone diving into the pits for some kind of strategic advantage under a safety situation. It doesn't make sense. It's unthinkable, really. Why is this in place? So that's a whole other topic that I feel the teams, the fans, the drivers, the stewards, the race directors could all save themselves a hell of a lot of work and stress if that rule was just turned around and
the
same way as other championships.
F1, unfortunately, is full of interesting quirks and features that make it the sport that we love in a way and create interesting discussion like this. And one of those things, I suppose, is the rules and regulations around what a team can do to a car. And we've got this interesting situation now where the regulations that were put in play last time around, in the last cycle, with all these winglets and various bits and pieces on the car sort of diverging, and we're getting this close racing now, and now we're going to change it all again. 2022, totally new look cars, bigger wheels, less aerodynamic bits and bobs all over the car. Can you just explain to our listeners what we can expect from the cars when we next see them roll out on track? Do you think it'll be a good thing for the sport, or should we be sticking with what we've got?
Well, I mean, at the end of every life cycle in the regulations, you get a closing of competition. I always describe it like climbing a mountain. You know, as time goes on, everyone's going to get to the top eventually. Some will get there quicker than others. So you all end up at the same development point together. And that's what we've seen over the last year, pretty much. You know, whether you're an engine manufacturer or car designer and manufacturer, you will naturally get closer and closer to the top of that development curve. So next year, you have to say that you're probably going to revert back to in a similar way to where we were in 2014. Unfortunately, that's how I see it. You'll see a bigger discrepancy between the haves and the have-nots. And I know this system's in place with a token system to kind of mitigate that, but the bigger teams had that advantage of having the gap. So like Mercedes had a huge gap a few years ago on their rivals. So they naturally focused on this year. It should have actually been this year, but because of COVID, it's been pushed back to 2022. And so they've had all that extra time to, with that buffer that they had over their competition, they've had this extra time to work on next year's car. So you'll probably see an even bigger gap and discrepancy between the teams out there for next year, and in time it will eventually close back up again. But I hope, the big hope, and the reason they're doing this is to limit the effects of downforce and necessity of downforce via the wings of the car, and increase the downforce in terms of the ground effects, the floor of the car. And by doing that, should, in theory, take away a bit of turbulence from the cars, still create the same amount of drag, so punch a relatively big hole through the air, but it shouldn't be as turbulent to follow another car because you're relying on the ground effects rather than the wings, which always flick up more turbulence. And that's what we've seen in the last couple of years, particularly this year, actually, cars not being able to follow close enough. And that really dilutes the racing. And then we have a situation like the last race in Abu Dhabi where all of the racing's pretty much done through strategy in the pits. And I prefer to see it played out on circuit. I've always preferred that way. And hopefully that's what we'll have with the new cars. They should look a bit more like the F2 cars, but a bigger version. Bigger wheels, 18-inch wheels instead of 13 that we currently have. This will change a lot of the suspension kinematics and design, putting more emphasis on suspension rather than just relying on these squishy big diameter sidewalls of the tyres, which did most of your suspension work for you. So a whole new redesign. They're totally new cars, similar power units still, and that's, I think, a good thing. But yeah, you'll see quite a different looking vehicle out there. Hopefully ones that are able to follow each other a bit closer.
And that's what we're all going to be hoping for, isn't it? I think we could talk to you about F1 all day, but let's talk about you, if we may be so bold. And how things started with you. We're going to park the F1 current chat. You started karting, didn't you? About aged 8, I think it was. How long did it take before it became clear that you could take this, you know, this could be something for you. This could be a bit of a career.
It took until I was 14 years old.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember it clearly that year. I was in a category called Junior TKM. And it was at a stage where you're at school and you're thinking about what you want to do. Like kids around you, myself, and just thinking about what you want to do with your life and, you know, which profession you'll want to get into, what floats your boat and all that. And I just had this kind of moment where I realised that, well, it's really obvious what I want to do with the rest of my life. I'm good at this, and I want to be a racing driver. I know I've got the skills to do it, and and I've got the momentum at that stage. And it seemed like a complete no-brainer to just dedicate my life to it. So, I just thought about it 24/7. And that's, it's very, very clear, in my mind. It was the time when it kind of went from being my dad's hobby, taking me and my brothers karting, to me being the one that wanted to go karting and wanted to take this further.
I was going to say, was there anything in the family precursor to you that meant you went to these kart tracks as a hobby? Like, was your dad sort of involved in it, or was it literally just, I quite like this, I'll take the kids?
Well, he was always into motorsport, and it was actually his brother, so my uncle, that got him into, as a fan, just got him into motorsport, which wasn't easy to do back then, you know, physically turning up to the races, sniffing out magazines to find little snippets of information on the sport that you wanted to follow. It's a totally different world that we live in now, where everything's, you know, on your smartphone. You can read the news, read up about it, and watch videos to your heart's content. It was very different back then. So, yeah, I kind of had my uncle to thank, really, for getting my dad into it and inspired. And then my dad, being a graphic artist and traditional sign writer, he sort of naturally gravitated towards wanting to sign write racing cars. And would, you know, he befriended people that were involved in racing and would sign write their cars and you know, whatever it was. It didn't matter whether it was a Formula Ford or a dragster. He'd be keen to surround himself, immerse himself in that environment.
Very nice. And now I'm going to fast forward a touch. We know that you were an Autosport Young Driver of the Year. You won that award, which is a very prestigious award that many...
Hang on a second. I'm going right here. Hold on. I'll be back.
Oh, what's he getting? What's he doing?
It's in my trophy cabinet, which you can't see. But
you've got a few out behind you.
Here you go.
Yeah. Oh, there it is.
Oh, look at that. Yes.
It's like an Oscar.
Yeah.
That is nice.
For the benefit of those who are listening to this, Ant's holding up his Autosport McLaren Autosport BIDC award from the year 2000. Goodness me. Harry was still in his nappies.
Yuki Tsunoda was only just born then.
Yeah.
So that's true. Yeah. 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 All right. Stop making me feel so old.
Sorry about that.
That's amazing. Though.
What goes around comes around. That's all I'll say.
I'm sorry. What an impressive achievement that was. Yeah. And it must be quite a special moment in your life, and then led you on to do some amazing championships after that.
Yeah, I mean, that was a, like I say, I don't keep many trophies and in the cabinet on show anyway, and that's definitely one of my proudest moments in motorsport. And it really gave me the footing to, you know, there's a huge amount of money back then to send you on your way and help you into Formula Ford, or that's the category I chose to do, and then on your way into Formula 3, and you're getting onto the ladder, the motorsport ladder, and you know, it was a big achievement back then, and one that I'm still very proud of today.
And on your way, you went on to compete in British Formula 3. You won the F3 Euro Cup. Things were looking very good, and they got even better for you when you became a test driver for BAR Honda. How did that opportunity show itself? Was this your first sort of genuine glimpse into a potential career in Formula 1?
Yeah, it really was. You know, Formula 3 was good, and I had at that stage a manager who was funding it. But, you know, on a finite budget, I must say. So, you know, we had to be careful in where we chose to go racing and what the costs were. But what we wanted is to always put ourselves against the best. And we, you know, at Hayward Racing in Formula Ford, and we took on the might of the Works Van Diemen cars, won the Formula Ford Festival, and then in Formula 3 took on Takuma Sato and wanted to just that desire to be honest with yourself and just say, look, if you want to do this, if you think you're good enough, you shouldn't shy away from competition. So we decided to go to Carlin, lucky enough to get into Carlin as well. And I delivered the goods in testing, and you know, it's not just simply rock up and you pay the money and you get a drive. You're up against you know, at least 10 other drivers of similar talent and budget that would allow them to drive as well. So, you know, but the focus was to try and put yourself in competition against the best out there. And alongside Takuma Sato in his second and a half season of Formula 3 was a very difficult challenge, but one that I feel like I rose to and scored I can't remember the exact number now, but a lot of pole positions and ended up finishing second in the championship to him, winning, like you say, the Paris Street Grand Prix, the Euro Cup that year. And no, I mean, it was after that, you were then really knocking on the door for Formula 1. And by the end of Formula 3, I'd been noticed by BAR, joined their young driver program. They were very in the early stages. And yeah, it was almost like created around my arrival at that same kind of time. And then that you were really knocking on the door to getting into F1 and started to become, you know, testing the car and things like that, and just straight line tests. But you could see where it could possibly lead you in the future. And it was really exciting that stage of your career.
Yeah. You did eventually knock on the door, and it opened not just to testing, but to actually a race drive. Can you talk us through what it's like to line up on the grid for your first Formula One race? What was obviously you'd had some car time already, but actually lining up with everybody else, waiting for the lights to go out, talk us through what that must feel like.
Well, my first race in Formula One was actually with Minardi. That was in Budapest in 2002, I think it was. Yeah, really early, actually, in my testing years with BAR. Thinking back to it now, that was properly jumping at the deep end. Now I know what I know. Driving a completely different car on completely different tyres to what I was testing at the time at BAR. We went from the Bridgestone to Michelin. And a different engine. Yes, it just, everything was new, and a circuit I'd never been to before. And I remember we had a fuel pickup problem in a car, and it meant I had to run 10 kilos of extra fuel. And I didn't really know what the implications were of that. Now I know that's 0.4 of a second.
Yeah.
And I qualified 0.4 of a second behind Mark Webber.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And now looking back now, I'm really proud of what I did, because around Budapest, that's a tricky little track, in a car I've never driven, and be 0.4 away from Mark, who we now know is, you know, one of the
he's all right,
best qualifying drivers, at least in Formula One, and could really manhandle that car around. It didn't have power steering, so I was really at the limit of my strength driving that thing compared to the BAR at the time, and it was all a bit of a shock. But lining up on the grid, there wasn't much pressure because I was last on the grid, but at least I had qualified. And that's the reason I was there, because Alex Yoon, the second driver that year, had failed to qualify within the 107% rule for a couple of Grand Prix in a row. And it meant that, I guess, something must have opened up, like a clause in his contract or something meant that he could potentially be replaced. I don't honestly know how it worked, but somehow I found my way into the car. Not forgetting, of course, it should have been Justin Wilson that was given that opportunity. He was given the opportunity. He couldn't fit the car, unbelievably, and he missed out on the chance. So I guess they went looking for the absolute opposite in height. God rest his soul. That was, you know, one of those moments. I grew up with Justin, racing him, and, yeah, just... it was one of those moments where it's one of those memories that I have of him, and of those moments in my earlier career. It's all one big jigsaw puzzle, and that's one piece that obviously didn't fall into place for him, but did for me. And you know, we all grew up racing each other, Jensen, Dan Weldon, and Justin, and it's
unbelievable
amazing how you all sort of rise up together. And so a lot of friends made along the way, and that was just one situation, where it should have been Justin, but for his height, our height differences, I found myself in the car. And so there was not much pressure really at the start of the race. As the lights went out, I just followed the pack down into turn one. But it was cool at the same time. Was cool to be thinking, wow, I've grown up my whole life as an 8-year-old kid watching Formula One, and here I am on the grid, with the likes of Martin Brundle commentating on your race. It was quite surreal. But in terms of pressure, there wasn't that much pressure. But obviously, you want to do the best that you can at all times. It didn't end the way that I wanted, but it was, I learned so much through those two races only that I did with Minardi.
A quick interruption to the show to remind you to check out our sponsor, F1 Experiences. F1 Experiences offer a wide range of packages that come direct from Formula One, giving you a unique experience of the pinnacle of motorsport. Official ticket packages come with the very best race tickets, first-class hotels and transfers, and unprecedented access, including track tours, pit lane walks, VIP hospitality, and loads more. It really is the closest you can get to Formula One. And thanks to F1 Experiences, you can return to the track this year. And Motormouth listeners can save 5% on your next F1 Experience package by using the code Motormouth when booking online at f1experiences.com.
That first full season that you got, though, you did get one in 2007, Super Aguri, a full racing season. You know, a few years later, can you say what obviously it was a team that was struggling financially as well, so you weren't always challenging at the front of the grid, but what was that like to have a full season under your belt and then going through the motions with Super Aguri? What were the highlights there?
That was a very different scenario to the early races with Minardi. I must say it was in a more familiar car. I'd been testing that car because it was the leftovers from the year before, in the 2006 season at BAR and Honda, where I was driving. I was doing, at that stage of my testing career, I was doing around 10 to 15,000 kilometres of driving a year. Wow. It was a serious job back then.
Yeah, reserve drivers would be killing for that these days, wouldn't they?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, any driver would love to get that level of testing mileage under their belt. And those years I learned the most. I really did, in terms of the technical attributes you need as a driver and things that, still, I feel I learned back then things about tyres, because it was a tyre war that some drivers today never experience until they join Formula One and start actually racing. We would test sometimes 20, 25 sets of tyres a day, and we'd be there for a 3-day test with three cars. You'd have the two race drivers either side of you in the garage, and you'd be there pounding round day after day. And the learning curve was basically vertical. To get the chance to actually race that car, the one I knew and loved, was fantastic. It was, I like doing things properly. I like doing things in a neat way. And the Minardi experience didn't really sit easy with me joining halfway through the season. It was all a bit chaotic. I much preferred going into a new year, learning the team, getting to know them, the team in Lee Field, and getting to learn my engineers and then going testing with them before the first race. And it was such a different experience, and one that I'll never forget. It was, again, a shame the way it ended with them running out of budget before the Turkish Grand Prix in 2008. But it was just a joy to be involved and to be part of that environment, in that car with that team for as long as it lasted.
But Formula One has obviously remained a big part of your life, and you've experienced Honda F1, and then became Braun F1, and then most recently Mercedes-AMG Petronas Formula One team. When a team changes hands like this, is it like wholesale changes? Do you notice these ownership changes? Does it change the way it operates day to day?
Not immediately, no. It doesn't change immediately. There's obviously a bit of angst at first from lots of the employees at the team. Sometimes it grows and you see opportunity and you see more like an influx of new staff arrive and the team grows and grows very rapidly, like it did from BAR into Honda, for example. But then you can see it diminish at the same time, like when Honda pulled out and it turned to Braun.
Yeah.
People worrying for their jobs, and every manager or team owner that comes along, they naturally, like any industry, I guess, any line of work, they want to put their own stamp on it and leave their own mark and make their own changes. And so I've seen that team change throughout the years from, well, since I joined at the beginning of 2002 to start my testing years there, to where it is today. And although it's really weird, although it's the same place, it's in the same facility at Raynard Park in Brackley, it's the amount of change is both in terms of physical change to the factory, but also the way the sport has changed and the way the personnel have changed, not just in numbers, but in terms of attitude, difference, belief. Some people are still there today that were there back when I joined in 2002, some even longer. And it's fascinating to see those people, the way that they've grown in their roles and or gone on to bigger and better things even. It's remarkable. I feel really privileged to have been there for such a long time to see this change in the factory there and watch the sport that I love change and manipulate the way the factory has changed over the years. Yeah. As well. It's been such an incredible journey. You know, I've worked with so many different people, from Craig Pollock through David Richards, Nick Fry, Ross Braun, now Toto Wolff. Honestly, they've all got their own touch.
Yeah.
And obviously are trying to do the best they can at that current time. But yeah, just fascinating to be there and see it from the inside, see it all change.
See it evolve. Yeah, it's amazing. And what experience that you're obtaining. You know, you could almost envisage a Formula One team headed up by Mr. Anthony Davidson in the future. Who knows?
I don't know about that one.
But now, listen, before we come on to your World Endurance Championship exploits, there is one very important piece of the podcast that we have to bring you. And we talked a little bit about it off air, our illustrious quiz, and I'll shortly hand over to Harry to introduce it to you. But I must point out that you said, I've got no chance of beating Karun Chandhok, you said to yourself. Karun actually is last, dead last out of, I don't know, 70, 80, 90 people that have taken this quiz.
Really? And the quiz
is usually about team radio or about that individual. And in his case, I think it was about him. And he just got it all wrong. He knows everything about motorsport, but knows nothing about himself. So you've already beaten him. But let me hand over to my bearded colleague to introduce you to the Motor Mouth quiz.
Thank you very much, Anthony Davidson. Welcome to Motor Mouths, the hardest quiz in motorsport, because Karun Chandhok can't even get 5 points.
I'm so worried.
In his defense, back then, we did Karun a couple of years ago and we had a different point system. So he doesn't, under the new point system, it's a bit like F1, we've gone through our fair share of point systems. I still don't think he'd be top, but right now you can score a maximum of 14 points. That is the max you can score. If you get 14, you go to the top of the leaderboard.
Very
because
doable.
You're the most recent person to do it. There are 5 bits of team radio coming your way and a bonus point. And all you need to do is listen to the clip and then give us a bit of context. And there are 3 points up for grabs for each question. Now, just so you know, here's how the standings are looking at the moment. At the top of the leaderboard currently is Susie Perry with 14 points. But if we have a look at some of your colleagues, perhaps Mark Webber is currently got 12 points. He's equal fifth with Natalie Pinkham. She did very well up there with a solid 12 points. We've already said Caroon's way down there. Rachel Brooks on 11 with Crofty and Will Buxton. And then a little bit further down, who you don't want to be scoring 7 points like Jack Aitken or perhaps Johnny Herbert with 8. So it's not, they weren't good. You got double points, Anthony. Are you ready?
Well, first clip. I'm so nervous. Yeah, I've never scored a point in Formula One, so this could be my day.
Here we go.
All right, then. Let's get Anthony Davidson on the points board. Tim, let's play the first clip, please.
Okay, Kimi, your safety car window is closed. Safety car, Modesi, and there is a lot of debris on the track.
I know, because it just happened.
I know.
My car is full of...
We are checing the tire.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you, who is the driver? Where are they? And what are they talking about?
Well, it's Kimi Raikkonen.
Yep.
Correct. We're off to a good start. That's a point.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean... doesn't sound like it's his Alfa Romeo engineer. I think it's an older clip than that.
Are you sure?
No, I'm not sure. Lots of debris on track.
I'll give you a hint. All of these for all of these team clips, they're all from this season.
Okay, that will help you out. Yeah, so he wouldn't be talking about the last race in Abu Dhabi because he wasn't there to see that Latifi crash. He'd already retired. Lots of debris on track. So
I think he's going to struggle here with this one.
A hard one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a tough one.
Yeah, where was he? So you're talking? Is he in?
It was a big old.
I think it was. Was it Jeddah?
Oh no!
I would have.
It was a big old crash and quite. Controversial. Everything's controversial in Formula One. I want to give you a good hint, but I don't want to give it away.
You're going to give it away. To be honest, I think we're out of time on that question.
Yeah, I'll take that one. I got the driver, but yeah.
Okay, all right. We'll give you one point out of that. It was actually the Russell Bottas incident in Imola.
That was the big old key
that happened right in front of him.
Of course it did.
But I'm afraid that is just one point, but more than your F1 career, so we're doing well. on to clip number two. Have a listen to this.
Michael, I just send you an email.
That's it.
That's all you get.
Yeah.
So who is it? What are they talking about?
Yeah, it was Toto Wolff to Michael Massey, wasn't it?
Yeah.
A few memes going around after that one. And...
where was it though? Do you
race,
remember?
Yeah, it was one I don't think I was at. I think it was before Brazil, even. I want to say Turkey.
Close to home.
Bit closer to home.
Yeah, it was Silverstone.
Yep.
Yeah, not in one.
Well, not in one. But I remember that. Yeah, I wasn't there at Silverstone for the Grand Prix. I was racing myself, but.
You've missed all the controversial ones this year, Ant.
I didn't actually hear that live, so that's my get out of that.
That's your get out. But hey, you get 3 points for that. So we're doing well here. We've already beaten Caroon. On to clip number three. Have a listen.
Here we go.
What a race! Yes, man! Felicidades or Feliz Navidad or whatever you say to Checo.
That's all you get.
Okay, same questions.
Sounds like Vettel.
Correct.
Yeah. Correct. Point in the bag.
What a race. Yeah. He had a pretty decent one. Was it Portimao, I want to say?
Keep going. Keep guessing.
Portimao. I remember that. Yeah, he had a really good race.
Do you want to hear it one more time?
Yeah, go for it again. Yeah.
Here it comes again.
What a race! Yes, man! Felicidades or Feliz Navidad or whatever you say to Checo.
Tricky.
I can't quite hear what he says.
So he says one, Feliz Navidad or Feliz Navidad or whatever it is you say to Checo.
Oh, to Checo. Yeah, so he had a race with Checo.
Going to have to push you for an answer.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go for his Zandvoort.
Afraid not. It was Baku where Checo won it in the end after Verstappen that big crash.
Yeah.
Unlucky, yeah. Unlucky. All right, here we go though. Still a couple more to claw back some points. Okay. Here is your penultimate team radio clip.
Ooh, here it comes.
I cannot do it, man. You're having a
so short.
Oh, that is
such a short one.
I think you've shortened that to what I said it was. But
I may
that is a harsh one.
That is tough.
So, Pierre Gasly?
Oh, no.
No?
Play it again.
Yeah. Okay, here, one more time.
I cannot do it, man. You're having a
not one of F1's most popular characters. That might help.
That is tough.
That is a really hard one.
I can feel a nil point coming on.
Oh, I thought that was Pierre. I'm a bit.
You're so harsh, man. Tim. I just want to.
You give everyone full marks.
No, I think I'm going to have to pass that one.
Have a random guess. You might get it.
Latifi.
No. Oh, you're in the ballpark though. It was actually Nikita Mazepin. So back towards the back.
Yeah, it worked.
I don't know.
He doesn't have a French accent, but
it's
just picking up a.
It was Mazepin shouting at his engineer because he asked
him to change
a mapping setting
in Monaco. Yes.
I
couldn't work out anything he was saying, but I do remember the frustration he was going through. And I actually defended him that day because
that
was really hard to be going through the menu system that he had to be going through
in Monaco.
It was a default mode. He had to fail a sensor. That's what it was. Yeah.
Oh, go on then. I'll give you a point. I'm allowing that.
Fair enough.
In charge of the quiz board.
He had something like 13 button presses to do in that request from his engineer. So
A tough one. Okay. This is your final team radio clip, but then we do have one more bonus point that you can pick up. So have a listen to this final clip.
Sit back and enjoy.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me, Kimi? Radio check. Radio check. If you can hear me, I need more charge. Okay, Kimi, box if you can hear me.
Can you hear me now?
No, negative. I can't hear you.
That's classic.
It's classic.
It was Kimi in Spa. It's Kimi. We know that. It's Kimi. Spa. It was very. I think we're
into the earlier part of the season here.
Where was this? I remember this one. It's hilarious.
He's had a few. To be fair, it's hard.
Can you hear me now? I'm going to go Portimao.
It was Bahrain.
Yeah,
to be honest, I don't think anyone would get that. That's our one. But you picked up a point there. You can claw an extra point back. But if you can answer me this, your first full racing season, of course, was in 2007 with Super Aguri.
Mm-hmm.
Who finished last in the standings?
Winklehock.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah.
Excellent.
He didn't lead a race though.
He did.
Which is more than I did.
But hey, the stats will say. Let me do
8 points.
So that was.
It's solid mid-table territory.
It is solid mid-table. It's not double figures, I'm afraid. But you have at least got on par with Johnny Herbert with 8 points. And you are equal with Timo Glock and just ahead of Steve Ryder and Jack Aitken. So Anthony Davidson, a solid 8 points.
Yeah, I'm proving that I'm more vision-based than audio.
There's no Sky Pad here, I'm afraid.
No. I would nail all of the video content if it had.
Oh, well, Anthony, thank you very much for playing the hardest quiz in motorsport.
Very well done indeed. I know.
Yeah, it's a tough one. That Mazepin one. I reckon I would have got the whole thing if you played the whole clip.
I think so.
Yeah.
Because what the whole clip is actually, it then goes to, it fast forwards to Baku, where his engineer tells him to do the same thing, and then he replies with, done.
Yes. Yes. Clearly practiced it in the simulator.
Yeah.
You have a lot more straights in Baku than mine.
Yeah, you've got time, haven't you? Yeah.
That was one of the hardest quizzes we've
ever
done.
One. So, I like that game.
You've done very well. Now, we're rapidly running out of time, and we do have a final three, which we ask all our guests, and we're going to have to fire them to you. But it would be wrong of us not to touch on the World Endurance Championship and Le Mans, which you have a long relationship with, an up-and-down relationship with. We can all remember back in 2016, the trials and tribulations of the last laps. But take us through the emotion, the feeling of winning in the World Endurance Championship and Le Mans. I mean, it must be an incredible race to be a part of. You've had some tremendous highs there. Take us through your wet career in a whistle-stop tour.
Whistle-stop tour. Well, yeah, so after Formula One, I didn't know where to turn, didn't know which category to try and get into. Had a test drive at Peugeot, absolutely fell in love with LMP1, the way the car felt, the camaraderie between teammates, you know, in the sports car scene was amazing. I've always been a team player, and that's why I was into the test driver role so well back in the day. And yeah, just fell in love with sports cars, got my chance at Peugeot in that test, but then it didn't come my way for a year or two later. Competed in Le Mans actually with Jos Verstappen and Darren Turner in the Aston Martin. It's running one of those cars behind me. I don't know if you can see on the screen. That was a fantastic race. 2009, that was. We had a 13th or a 14th position finish, but we were running as high as third at one point. And I just knew that, well, Le Mans was something I wanted to try and win in the future. And I had 13 goes at it. Unlucky for some. And I had quite literally my ups and downs in 2012 in Toyota, in my first year at Toyota. Broke my back at the Mulsanne corner after a back marker turned in on me on a, which should have been just a simple overtake. It turned out me going up in the air and end up in the hospital with a broken back.
Yeah.
Didn't need any surgery, so I was back for the next year and the year after that and the year after that and the year after that, and and almost won it. Finished second once before and a third, but never won it. Closest that came was in 2016 with Toyota again, where the car failed on the last lap. When we were in the lead by a minute and a half.
The pain.
Heartbreaking, still hurts to think back to it now. But that was the closest I ever got to winning the thing. But I did win the championship, the world championship, as you said, in 2014. The car was mega that year. It's the best season I had in sports cars, the best I got for myself, and one that I look back on with huge pride. And to be a fully fledged FIA world champion is something that doesn't come around very easily. And to have that in the trophy cabinet where I just showed you my Autosport Young Driver of the Year award is the FIA World Endurance Championship trophy as well.
And what a way as well to sort of, I know you've announced your retirement, of course, this year, and to go out, you know, still incredibly competitively as well, you know, scoring podiums and wins in your final year. That must have been a really nice way to sort of finish your career. How was it getting out of the car, in the Jota Sport car, weren't you? How was that getting out of that for the last time?
It was, it's obviously a bit emotional. It's been a way of life for 34 years, been racing. And I'm from that generation where we started as 8-year-old kids. So, you know, even though I'm just 42 years old, I've been doing this a long time, and it feels like I've been doing it a long time. And I didn't want to walk away when I was sort of scratching around looking for a drive or just feeling like I wasn't quite at the level that I demand from myself. I wanted to go out while I was still on top and feeling like I could still be competitive. But I could feel it coming. I could feel that the mistakes were starting to creep in every once in a while, and actually happened in that last race, well, a lapse of concentration and randomly drove into the pits. I thought the engineer had called me in, but he hadn't. Just small things like that. And I just thought, I can feel it's coming. at some point, and I would prefer to stop now on my terms than to just sort of wither away in as such and not be the driver that I demand myself to be. And I'm happy with my decision, and I can now, if I want to, drive for fun, without it being overly competitive. And it was really that competition, that level of competition that not just other people put on you, but what I put on myself. I just didn't want to live with that anymore. So I'm quite happy doing my simulator work for Mercedes and striving for perfection in there, but it's not competitive. It's not all about the lap time in there, for example, and competing against other people. It's constructive work. So I'd be quite happy to just drive stuff for fun. I felt like it was the right time. But stepping out of that car for the last time was obviously emotional. I'm proud of what I've achieved in my career and in this sport. And now, hopefully, I can go on for many years to come talking about it and bringing my love for the sport to the people at home or wherever they are listening around the world, and trying to get across all of those nuances that this incredible sport brings. Absolutely. Brings along, and trying to put it into layman's terms. From the way I see it and try and explain it the best way I can, in the most simple way I can.
And you convey it and articulate it very, very well. And I'm sure we'll see you for many, many more years on our screens. Now, there's loads we haven't covered. We've taken up nearly an hour of your time, which has whizzed by. But as with many of our guests, we're going to have to do an Anthony Davidson part two. But there is...
I warned you I waffle on.
We love a waffler. But we have three questions which we ask all of our guests. These final three questions are brought to you by our friends at F1 Experiences. I'll kick off with the first one. And what's got you excited at this very moment?
What's got me excited at this very moment? I say, just thinking back to the last Grand Prix, I can't get it off my mind. I really can't.
Good answer. Harry, over to you for number two.
Anthony Davidson, what is your favourite racing destination?
Silverstone, because I get to sleep in my own bed.
Yeah, attaboy.
Nice.
What are you scared of?
Mosquitoes.
Really?
Oh.
Actually scared
of
them? Not.
Or just mildly annoyed.
It's more than annoyed. Yeah.
Can only imagine it like when a wasp comes and people get a bit,
it's a bit like that.
You can barely see a mosquito though.
That's exactly why.
It's what I say about spiders. It's not the big ones. You can see them. It's the little ones. Where the hell do they go?
I'm all right with spiders. I like spiders. Yeah.
All right. Okay.
High-pitched buzz when you're asleep.
You handle the spiders.
That's a nightmare.
Oh, well, you learn something new every day. You handle the spiders and I'll handle the mosquitoes. Look, Anthony Davidson, what an absolute pleasure. What an absolutely amazing career as well. We love seeing you on our screens week in, week out as well on Sky and everything else you do. We'll be watching what you do going forward with hawk eyes as well. I'm sure Mercedes will want to keep that on the down low. But Anthony Davidson, thank you so much for coming onto the Motormouth podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. Yeah, absolute pleasure. Thanks.
Before you go, one final reminder to check out F1 Experiences, the official experience, hospitality and travel program of Formula One. F1 Experiences is the closest you can get to the sport. Official ticket packages, which include the best race tickets, first class hotels, travel and exclusive behind the scenes access across a Grand Prix weekend. F1 Experiences offer packages like no other. So to book your F1 Experiences package, head online to f1experiences.com. And if you enter code Motormouth, you'll get 5% off too. Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth_, Instagram at Motormouth_official, and Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can also download the Motormouth app where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile to interact with other fans, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. We're also proud to be supporting the Brain Tumor Charity too, so make sure you check the links in the podcast description to find out
how you can help cure brain tumours quicker. Don't forget to like, subscribe and review. And until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, where are you, the police?
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.